Mr. Apocalypse is coming. He's rising into view just like the sun. He's bringing living truth and bringing freedom. And a wake-up call designed for everyone. Be the very thing you've been longing for, or it might be the very last thing on your mind. It could be something that you sent on ahead of you, or it could be something you left behind.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Les Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet to Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, or remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Les Visible.
Hello! Greetings, greetings, Earthlings, and those from other systems and dimensions who like to drop in occasionally. Here we are at Dog Poet Transmitting, and for the next last time, transmitting from this location. Times change, circumstances change, and we change. The easier that we just naturally adapt, the easier it'll go, and in time become effortless. All of our stress and suffering can be laid at the doorstep of two different causes: our resistance to change and bad choices, resulting in actions that accrue bad results from times forgotten. We are what we are until we are not. Actually, we are what we are not until we are what we are. All those changes we go through are designed to reveal to us what we are. Far too many of us do not wish to see what that is because we fear it will interfere with what we want. This is rather foolish because we don't even know what we really want until we know who we really are. Outside of being a conundrum, life is also terrifically ironic and made all the more so because of all the people who can't see it. One of the things that blinds people also, not only the irony, but the beauty of life, is vanity. There are other things, of course, and when you have them in multiples, as more and more people these days seem to do, there's a great deal more than irony and beauty that are hidden from view. It is staggering for me to watch the speed of the dumbing down taking place in the greater world out there, from the warping of word spellings and reduction to single letters, which is matched only by the banality of the message, and to the general fascination with trivia and the desired expediency for whatever it is. I want it now. I want it now. Wah! I don't mean to criticize humanity, but I am perplexed as to what else I can consider as relevant. There's not much else. I can't say, hey, way to go, guys. There's that trick of the mind where our instant reaction to a clear and objective view is, oh no, what's going to happen? The human mind has such a resistance to the far wiser pose of instantaneous reliance on the ineffable. Instead, we fall back on our own limited resources and attempt to analyze or troubleshoot what we don't even understand. Perhaps that is all criticism, too. Maybe that's all criticism is, a failure to understand, an inability to comprehend. Perhaps it is just an inability to remain silent, and that would also imply a trust and reliance on the ineffable. It is our nature, most especially in times of pervasive materialism, to trust to our own devices, which will invariably fall short of enduring success. We are meant to fail on our own. That's the point of it. We are not the masters of our fate and the captains of our soul until that has been conferred upon us after a period of time, following whatever personal failure was so significant that it resulted in our surrender to a higher mind. You literally can't win on your own, and only prosper for the purpose of demonstration. a demonstration that is intended for your attention and the attention of all others who are given the opportunity to observe it. That's all history is, a record of spectacular human failures at being human, as well as a record of man's inhumanity to man. It's a record of resistance to change and bad choices. Given what has preceded until now, it is difficult to muster optimism for the future, when our greatest technological advancements seem to be applied in ways to kill one another on a larger scale with a greater efficiency. Yes, the overall appearance of things is grim because the overall drive of the masses is to their own extinction, whether that is personally achieved or accomplished in a crowd. But there are exceptions everywhere among those who found it possible to live outside of the awesome force of burning need as it expresses itself in the appetites and desires of the masses. Conformity is an awful thing, especially when it is an enforced conformity. And enforced conformity is to be expected in times of materialism, when self-interest and the rule of corporations is on the ascendant. I saw a movie years ago called Rollerball, which I consider one of the most prophetic films I've ever seen. And some while later, I saw it listed as one of the 10 worst movies ever made. I suppose there's a reason for that, and the reason being that it showed the naked and imperious greed of corporations all too well. Today I was watching How Much Does Your Building Weigh, Mr. Foster? It's a documentary of the architect Norman Foster, who was a great admirer of Buckminster Fuller and who had the great good fortune to have been able to spend quality time with him. He has built some impressive buildings, and his bridge in France is truly a work of art. I've always liked the idea of being an architect, but you need a decent amount of right brain, which I don't have. You need a facility with higher math, which I don't have. So I like to think of myself as someone engaged in the architecture of the soul. Here, too, one has to deal with stresses, balance, and the innovations of inspired design. And since I will always be a student, I like to think of myself as a student of the master architect of all things. I can hardly know or possibly imagine even a very tiny amount of what is present in the mind of the master architect. But that is perfectly fine, because only a very tiny amount of any of that would apply to me at any particular time anyway. There you go. Watching that film today was a fascinating view into the mind of a genius, someone who has most assuredly left his mark on this world in the short term, relatively speaking, or for as long as his buildings will last. It made me think about all the remarkable souls presently engaged in their particular pursuits here. Many of them are doing wonderful work, and I have never heard their names and possibly never will. It puts things in scale in a way. It plays into the sense of perspective upon the insignificance of one's personal self. I'm familiar with the lives and personalities of famous men and women to some degree. I used to read a lot of biographies, and I know that there is a very wide spectrum between them. Some of them are truly great, and some of them are only famous. There was a New York architect, I won't mention his name, who was responsible for a great many buildings in that city, and he was well known for his arrogance. In the minds of many there, it seemed fitting he should be. After all, it is a very arrogant city. I was thinking about New York City today because I was earlier watching yet another film called Something's Gotta Give, with Jack Nicholson, Diane Keaton, and Keanu Reeves. And some parts of it take place in New York City. As I was watching the city, scenery, the sidewalks, and interiors of the restaurants, I thought to myself, life is just going on there, same as it ever was. In this moment or any moment, very few of the inhabitants are thinking about anything other than what they want and how to get it. The power and energy of the city is a palpable force. It has a significant measure of heat to it. I remember nights walking in that city and seeing the smoke and steam rising from the sidewalk grates, and thinking that that was an indication of hell beneath it. In New York City, it has a personality of its own. It's that place where the weak are killed and eaten. And L.A. is the place where nothing is real. All cities have their personalities, just as do the many heavens and hells, and we are all bound for some variation following our visit here, based on what we said and did and adjusted to our personalities. Heaven wouldn't be much fun if everyone was vastly different from yourself. This is not something I go into much because it is so intricate and so vast. You can't cover much ground even if you spend your whole life doing it. And my knowledge of the beyond is not great by any means anyway. Intuitively, I sense certain things, and I believe they're so to a degree, but it's similar to imagining what it's like to swim, never having done so in the actual experience of swimming. There are people who take exception to my appreciation of psychedelic substances. Usually they have never taken them themselves to begin with, so I need to point out that it is the height of ignorance married to arrogance to have an opinion on something which you know nothing about. I'll be the first to admit that they are not for everyone, but given that I have taken them over 1,000 times, and given the shape I'm in and the condition of my mind, I'd say it worked out for me in the long run. One has to look to motivations in things like this. For many people, getting high or low is a form of escapism. Real life, or one's perception of it, being unpleasant, one wants an improvement on the grayscale existence. For some, it is a matter of thrill-seeking, or as a means to an end, like sexual congress, for instance. For myself, I took these substances in my pursuit of the ineffable, and pretty much all the time I was able to establish a clear communication and have a blessed assurance that what I believed to be true was true, even if I didn't understand it all that well. I was pretty relentless about it. You have to be pretty relentless in order to have done it over 1,000 times. The most pressing of motivations for me, anyway, was the palpable pressure of material existence. It is 24/7 involved in sucking you into its machinery. Yeah, you know, we're in times of material darkness, and it takes a lot of thought to move through it. There's a gulf, a vast gulf in reaction to that which is done out of love and that which is done for other motivations. Intention is key to the ultimate result of any endeavor, and this is yet another advantage to making love your motivator and in not doing anything that isn't motivated by love. Love is a power which cannot be measured. It's limitless. It is we who put limits on it through a restriction of our faith commensurate with our belief in and reliance upon the material world. The basic structure of everything we have to deal with is simple, but our minds compromise the simplicity and make it complex. That's not a good thing. For me, psychotropic substances very quickly reduce everything back to its basic simplicity and also put me in direct communication with those I wish to communicate with. I never recommend this particular path to anyone because it is a given you will run into manifestations that can seem frighteningly real, and which in some cases are. And if your mindset is like mine, you absolutely delight in this kind of thing. All well and good. Not all well and good. You literally have to be mad according to what passes for sane in this world in order for this to work for you. That said, regardless of how you finally may come to whatever understanding of things you've come to, that bears any resemblance to what it actually is, you still have to go mad. Going mad is a prerequisite. Why is that? Because the realms beyond are not something that a sane mind can accept. One has to be comfortable beyond the borders of reason. You can get there gradually or you can get there quickly as some of us have. It's not quick in any case because other things have to have happened at other times in other lives. It is a promise of the Amitabha Buddha that if his image is in your mind and his name is upon your lips at passing, you'll be ferried to his Western Pure Land and be permitted to take all your future reincarnations there. How incredible is that? That is past amazing. How many people are taking advantage of that? Not many. Let us keep in mind that sincerity plays a major part in this, so mechanical chanting of a phrase or name is not necessarily a valid passport out. There's always more to these things than there seems to be, and there are entities whose sole purpose is to make you forget the name of your benefactor in the hour of your death. Of course, you have to be prone to that, but most are. Here's the cardinal truth. In all its simplicity, you have to want it more than anything else, and it is always best if you want it more than anything else, some while short of your due departure date. Authenticity intensifies according to how long and how consistently you've been at it. And authenticity in these things is significant in terms of outcome. Let me say it again. You have to want it more than anything else, and you got it. That is the majority of the whole affair. Having acquired certain qualities and assets of the divine is also super helpful. And our God is a generous God. He, she is much inclined to give you a loan of most anything, given that you employ it wisely. This is one of the reasons I have often recommended that one go into a room or into nature for 3 days with nothing more than water and something to sleep on, and a blanket, of course, and call out for the divine for every moment of the day until you are exhausted or inclined to take a nap. Then you do, and then you go right back to it again with all your strength. You might believe you have gotten nothing out of it sometimes. For some people, it might seem that way, but under no circumstances will you come out of it without major benefits of some kind, and it will assure portions of yourself of your intensity of purpose and thereby give proof to the consideration that you want it more than anything else. In the Bible it says, what does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. In other words, you have to walk the talk. That's the big kicker. We have to perform as we know we should, but we have made arrangements with ourselves to make things look other than they are for the sake of convenience and self-interest. We're pretty clever at this sort of thing. Self-deception is the primary cause of all of our problems. This is why suffering is the nature of life, because until we cease our self-deception, we will manufacture painful experiences for ourselves. Don't blame me for this. Blame Gautama Buddha. He's the one who first pointed it out. All life is pain caused by ignorant desire, he said. Actually, we must blame ourselves. This should be quite simple, huh? We stop deceiving ourselves and we stop suffering. Life is pretty easy to understand. We come here as the spirit in search of experience. The hint on this is that we should learn from it. If we don't, at some point we get smacked upside the head. Well, I think we can leave it at that for this segment. And since we have come to the end of another broadcast, and I will see you next week if there is one. In the meantime, you know what job one is. May each of us have some real success at that in the coming week. Alrighty then. Om Amitabha. Greetings, Lord Ganesh. Hare Krishna. Bismillah Irrahman Irrahim. Much love, Lady Nature and Tara. Hail, Lord Jesus Christ. Carry on, Baha'u'llah. Aloha and Haru!
He's long and tall and slender, and he's got a walking stick. You'll be changed forever if you get hit by it. He's coming for the Zionists and all their bankers too. If you don't behave yourself, he's coming after you. There's no way to stop him. He can't be bribed or bought. And he's sweeter than the air in spring, and meaner than you thought. You're the deer inside his headlights, if you're the kind that hunts by night. And no one stays anonymous when he gets you in his eyes. Mr. Apocalypse is coming, oh yeah. He's rising into view just like the sun. Bringing live and truth, he's bringing freedom. And a wake-up call designed for everyone. He's here. Mr. Apocalypse is here.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the ONSIC Radio Network of Stations.